You're listening to Coon Hunting Confidentials on the Houndstooth Podcasting Network, where we explore anything and everything coon hunting and listen to coon hunting stories from across the nation that include cryptids, the paranormal, the unexplained, and a whole hell of crazy. I'm Daniel Felker, your host. Join me and my buddies Dustin Faulkner and Ryan James as we explore into the confidential side of coon hunting. Warning, some material may not be suitable for children. Yo, 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 what is going on, everybody? I got a wheezing in my voice, and I got Dustin and Ryan right here with me.
I ain't wheezing.
The pollen has been kicking my butt the last 3 days, dude. I got my inhaler. It is really messing with my asthma.
The pine trees are mating.
It's ridiculous, man. It is ridiculous. Everything's yellow in the south right now. And it's going to get worse.
From pine just.
So, well, let's see. What all. We had a last little bit of hunting season that went out. So it's officially out now as far as kill season goes. And I guess the last night I went, me and Ryan went when the last episode, whatever the day that episode was released, we went hunting that night. Was it that night? Yes, it was. It was a Wednesday night. That was the last night I went. Got a gun pulled and everything.
I forgot about that part.
Yeah. So, I've been going wide open today. I don't want to elaborate on that. It was a little bit of a misunderstanding. Dude thought I was trespassing and whatnot. And
we was not trespassing.
Was not. And then he had a gun in his hand, but he never raised it up. He had a gun in one hand, a cell phone in the other. And I wish I would have waited a little later, and that never would have happened because
they wouldn't have known. They would have probably shot us then.
So, but, I hate when I'm wheezing like that because I have to adjust my breathing compensate for the microphone picking up that mess.
He was breathing.
But I've been wide open today. I got up this morning, went to Whitmire, and I did more watching than I did helping, but about 8 o'clock this morning, they popped a hog in the head and butchered it and made sausage.
Some Sasha.
So I was pretty impressed that they started that right at 8 o'clock on the dot with the pow-pow. And then all of that, and then by 12:30, man, there was 192 pounds of sausage already been made and put out and everything.
That ain't hanging or nothing.
Mm-mm. It went straight from the. But Mike said he's done hundreds
a few like that
since
too.
He was a kid. He had a 400 pound hog. Mm-hmm. Did everything right there. Cut it. Man, I hadn't been around that since I was like a kid, and I wanted to see how it's done. And it's done pretty much like a coon or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Except for with the sausage, golly, man, you pretty much got to leave like 80% or so of that fat off that daggone hog.
You don't have to, but I want me some made like that. Devin don't put a lot of fat in his sausage.
Well, this is a fatty sausage. I got 1 pound of it. That was just for my daddy. He gave me 1 pound of his. It was good. But then we left and went about 2 o'clock this afternoon, was in Newberry. Me and my daddy sat down and recorded with my great uncle. He's like 91. I think that's what he said. That's my granddaddy's brother. So he's kind of like the last living Felker that like left Pomeri and went to Whitmire. And so it was pretty cool sitting down talking to him. He's got that Pomeri accent. So
Pomeri.
Then Ava had a ball game, and now here we are. Dustin's future stepson had a ball game. And Other than that, I've been wide open today. I'm looking forward to recording and going doggone home, going to bed. And today, now it's getting late, and Ryan's talking about wanting to go hunting. Was. You still going to try to go?
Nope. Dustin said him's tuckered out.
Daniel's tuckered out, too.
I really wouldn't know.
He could take it or leave it.
Yeah.
He wouldn't.
I wasn't going to get upset over it.
I got you.
I wasn't going to show out or nothing.
Well, have y'all listened to any good – oh, I know something I do want to
talk about.
Any good podcast lately? I've listened to several on Feist and stuff like that lately.
That's pretty much all I've listened to.
I ain't got to listen to it.
We might as well give them a shout-out, Kennel Confidentials.
There's more freaking podcasts than
– one would think.
Mm-hmm. I can't even keep up with them. There's Treed Up.
I'd be listening to that one.
I just started listening to that one. Then there's a Kennel Confidential.
I ain't listened to none of them yet.
There's some good ones.
There's some I didn't even know nothing about. I haven't even listened to just a here, there, and yonder. And most of them have been about Feist that I have listened to. So.
Yeah, I ain't listened to Feist podcast yet.
They've been pretty good ones.
Let me see what I've been listening to. The Bear Grease, Slick Tree Podcast.
Never heard of it.
The Hunting Dog Public.
Heard of it.
Tree Talking Time.
Definitely heard of that one. Hey, we got with this conversation we got today, there's a tie.
Looks like Houndsman XP has changed their name.
That's what I seen on there the other day.
To the Hound Dog Podcast Network.
I noticed that too, but I just kind of.
I hadn't listened to them in about 6-8 months. They're just too many to listen to.
I don't know if Semper Doggins going flying solo now. I'm not sure with Bryce Matthews. Sure. Not 100% sure about that. But Mr. Steve Fielder's brought on a co-host with him. They gave us a shout out at the very when. Two, three weeks ago when they did that first one, golly, I can't remember what they called it now, by the wood stove or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they gave us a shout out. And they was going to try to spoof us. I guess like.
What did that mean?
Kind of like a parody or something like that. Kind of not make fun, but cut up with.
Yeah.
I guess that's the way I took it. I took it.
Are they picking on
us? They were going to do it in a fun gesture, but Mr. Steve tried to
they
sound
might
like
not
me.
Want this smoke.
Mr. Steve tried to sound like me. He was like, "This is Daniel from Coonut and Confidence." I forgot what he said. It was like, right at the very beginning of that very first one.
I got to listen to it.
I'm going to have to listen back to it, too, because I miss that.
But let's see.
I'll check him out.
Oh, I know this is something I want to talk about.
Uh-oh.
There's nothing important. It's just talking about it.
We'll talk about it.
Speak on it.
You know how you've been like crazy about them Bobcats here lately, and that's all you really been talking about, thinking about?
Yeah.
I've been like on that Iditarod mushing thing. Like, I want to do that so bad.
Well, if so you do bad. That, me and Dustin's going to start a bobsled team.
We're going to put Ryan in the nose of that motherfucker.
We're going to get it, son.
We're going to get it. I'll be at the back.
We're going to have to come up with a new braking system.
No, I was listening to a podcast, which Andrew, this is his second year. He got to go to Alaska and work the Iditarod. And I thoroughly respect the Iditarod and sled dogs because I think that is the pinnacle of dog athleticism right there. 1,000 miles through the snow and all that and the conditioning, everything that they go in, put in that dog, nutrition, the science, when to hydrate. all that, but.
Do you know how hard it is to beat the hell out of 20 dogs at one time?
16. You leave with 16.
Okay.
But that's still a lot of whipping.
Man, I was listening to Dallas Seavey.
We are just joking. They do not whip these dogs.
Nuh-uh. If you have a dog die on the trail, at a checkpoint, something like that, outside of if that, say like that moose that Dallas Seavey had to put down,
yeah.
If it would have killed his dog, that wouldn't have scratched him. But if your dog dies, any of them in your thing, at any of the checkpoints or any time on that trail, you're automatically scratched from the race. What? You can drop a dog off if its health is going down at a checkpoint, leave it there.
And get another dog?
Nope, you cannot get another one. That's why you start with 16 and dwindle down as you get on further in the race.
Man, they ought to let you get like two. You know what I'm saying? You ought to get two.
Two?
Yeah, two.
You're never going to make 1,000 miles with two dogs.
No, he's saying two extra. Oh, yeah, two like extras. Two sets somewhere at a checkpoint.
Like back in the day when this thing first started here, you could find another damn mutt dog or
but
something.
But the whole thing is based off the serum run.
The serum? You got to have that serum?
Yeah, like
when, the when they ran that medicine, you know, Balto, who got all the glory, even though he only run the last leg.
Togo ran 250-something of the whole. Yeah. He ran three times more than any other dog when they was getting from, like, Fairbanks, I think. Mm-hmm. And it had to go all the way to Nome, Alaska. That's why.
But it was one dog that did it?
No. One, it was that lead dog. The lead dogs get the glory.
Yeah, Balto stole the glory from Togo.
Actually, there was two lead dogs. There was a dog named Balto and a dog named Fox. And the guy that was writing the article in the paper for the Associated Press thought that Fox, people would think that there was a dog and a fox pulling this sled.
So he used Balto.
So he left Balto. He used Balto, took a picture of him, and left Fox off.
Well, that's messed up.
But the dude that owned, man, I listened to a podcast about that. That dog Balto and them dogs, them sled dogs, because this.
That's what I was going to say.
They got bought. They was in L.A., them big, I forgot which breed that they had that they was using back then. But they bought them, and it was in L.A. on the sidewalk as a side piece, like a side view. People, a side piece, that didn't sound right at all. It was like a
what kind of sick live in L.A.?
It was so they was in bad health. They couldn't take the heat. They was just like run down. They was having a sucky life as a like circus show.
Yeah, that's
just on the side of L.A.
Assassinated them.
But they ended up getting bought and took to somewhere in Ohio and lived the rest of their days on a farm there.
What don't make no sense is you think they was like breed to them or something. I don't know.
What was it?
They did breed the Togo.
It was the Alaskan Malamute, maybe?
There's Malamute or.
I'm trying to think.
It's a Malamute, probably.
What?
They're probably just mutts.
Sepala. He didn't have mutts. He wanted purebreds because that's.
It's purebred mutts. It's just it's
way back then, Sepala, he had, because he come from Norway, and he was hard on these, and I can't remember what they were. They may have been Eskimo. They wasn't Eskimo Spitz.
No, they wasn't Eskimo Spitz.
They were something else, but they have since then bred out because they've brought all these other concoction of stuff in just for the race.
Let me just find out. Yeah. This says Balto was an Alaskan Husky.
They probably messed around and put Walker Dog in them like every damn thing. Ruined the whole damn breed.
They did what? Now
they probably put some Walker in them.
They did. I've listened to one that some of them bred Walker into them for bigger, or not Walker, bred Hound into them for bigger pads or bigger something conditions. Bird dog for.
It looks like they stuffed Balto.
The wind.
Longevity.
I think they stuffed Balto.
I think they did.
Yes, they did.
I think they did.
And he does not look like no modern day husky, buddy.
He does not.
Them Alaskan huskies, like Dallas Seavey, who won his record breaking six Iditarod this year. He'll basically tell you the Alaskan Husky is known as the Alaskan Husky, but they are mutts. Yeah, Leonard Sepala.
Well, he was they got darn just like everything else. They got short hair in them. That old German short hair.
Yeah. But if I could do anything else outside of – that's an interesting question because I'm curious. Involving dogs that were not hunting, tree dogs, bear dogs, any other kind of working, sporting dog.
There's got to be some kind of little bug or something.
Is there something you would do other than
– other than running hounds?
I'd do herding and cattle dogs.
That's what if I had to put money on it, I was thinking that's what you would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd probably – I don't know.
I would do the mushing.
Like I couldn't do a bird dog?
Get you a cart. We'll build you a cart, and we'll strap that song up to Echo.
I
have thought about this thing.
We got a Joanna sled dog.
I looked at the plans on building some dogs.
We got them Joanna Malamutes, bro. Them Jalamutes.
That's what we're going to call them, Jalamutes.
Yeah. We got them. And if we ain't got them, just give me 6 months. I can collect them off the end of the road. We'll have a team for you, know it.
But I told Georgia, I said, if there was raccoons in Alaska.
There is.
Mm-mm. Google it.
What?
They've tried to introduce them several times, but they have not took. They won't hold in Alaska.
Are you for real?
Yeah.
They probably freeze to daggone death.
They, I told Georgia, if something happens to her, I said, I'm probably going
to
pack up.
This says, yes, raccoons are known to live in Alaska. They were introduced there during the 1930s for the fur trade.
Uh-oh. Hold on. Let me ask Google.
Raccoons aren't native to Alaska.
Are there
rascally raccoons?
Is that Google? Are there raccoons in Alaska?
According to Alaska Department of Fish and Game, state of Alaska, raccoons are native to Alaska, but there have been a number of attempts to introduce them.
That's what mine's saying.
And
are presumed to be extirpated. So according to the Alaska.gov, they ain't none. But the other thing I read said they was. Raccoons, wild pigs, and other bad ideas for Alaska. Anchorage Daily News.
Other bad ideas. But I told George, I was like, dang, babe. I said, you watch all these TV shows about Alaska. I was like, I don't even get into them like you do. She was like, I just like to look at it. I don't want to actually live there.
Oh, it's beautiful, babe.
If it's beautiful, that beautiful on TV, I can just imagine.
Well, I've been. And when I got back, son, I started looking for a job up there. And if you don't want to be a police, they ain't crap
right.
to do in Alaska.
That's right.
If you don't want to be a police and catch freaking meth heads, they is not a job in Alaska for me.
Well, dude, you can make meth or
that.
Alcohol. We could put a steel together up there and get down. Somebody needs their pilot license, Dustin.
I think it'd be neat getting me a bush plane.
Yeah, get you a bush plane. I'm down with it. I fly on a bush plane.
I would, too.
Me and Casey thought about getting his, too. We've talked about this.
I've thought on it.
You might need to get, like, a four-man if I'm going to ride with you.
Where do you go in South Carolina to get a pilot's license?
I think you got to drive to Greenville.
Shit, I seen a sign on my way to Florida one time. It was like $100 you could take a
pilot. That's the one I need.
It's down there, like, it's right across. It's on the line or right across the line into Georgia down there. Down by Augusta.
That's the one I need.
There's a place down
there
somewhere you get that $100 pilot license. There's a big old billboard.
That sounds kind of like where they said the terrorists from 9/11 got their pilot license from.
It probably is, dude.
It was somewhere in the backwoods like that.
It was like $100. Man, what do you think them people was thinking when they give them their pilot license?
I guess
the same damn thing them truck driving companies be thinking.
I think that whole story was made up any freaking way.
The government did that shit.
They made them people up. How did it? Like, man. Anyway, let's
go get that old hell.
Yeah, this one here is talking about financing, which means I can't afford it.
What, pilot license?
Yeah. Airline Dang. Career pilot program in Greenville. competitive edge with access to full finance, fixed cost pricing.
Oh, that's probably to go fly for like Boeing or somebody.
With the 574 aircraft. I just want to drive. I want to fly a little plane.
Hey, well, if you wanted to fly a parachute, you know the things where you put the motor on your back?
Yeah.
I know a dude in Newberry to teach you how for $150. Or he'd just take you up like this. I guess they start. I forgot the name of his little business where we'd give him a shout out.
I don't know his business. I know his name. I don't know his business, but man, I asked Mike Kitchens today when we was over there. They was butchering that hog.
Mm-hmm.
And his brother come up, Larry. Now, Larry's nickname is Bo Dick. Everybody knows him by Bo Dick. So, and Larry's short. Golly, he's short. But he's funny. We got talking about, he was talking about trapping and stuff. And he was telling me, I don't even know where to start with everything he was saying. I don't know how he got the name. I don't know how he got the name Bo Dick. I know, golly, I can't say this.
I can't say that on podcast.
I cannot say it. There's so much about Bo Dick that I cannot say on this podcast. I'm just sitting there thinking, I'm like, nope, can't say that. Let's say he's been sprayed by a skunk and thrown up on by a buzzard.
What did he say was worse?
I've almost been.
He said they both pretty disgusting. They both bad.
Skunk's pretty tough.
He saw a baby buzzard in this old building they went into, and they was going. He saw these buzzards flying around his old barn. He said he looked over and he saw this. He said, two little fluffy things.
Yeah, they'd be white.
He said, I went over there and picked it up. And he said, that son threw up all over me.
Okay, so he's retarded.
Yeah.
Great story.
Yeah, that's what I said. He said he was trapping. Him and his daddy used to trap. My very first trap my daddy ever bought me, a live trap, come from his daddy, Mr. Oliver Kitchens. And he's like, I had one side of the barn, my trapping stuff. My daddy had his side, his trapping stuff. And he was like, I was trapping. I caught a bobcat one time. And he was like, I went down there and I was like, I seen it. And he was like, you know what? It dawned on me. If I keep this bobcat alive, I can get $100 for it. He's like, but I left my catch pole at the truck. And I'm way down in the woods. He said, so I made a split tree. A limb and split it, and I held it down.
Yeah,
he was like, and I got that song on out from that foot trap. And he said, I wrangled that thing, and he said, I had it all up. He said it was scratching me on my back. He said it wasn't digging claws. It was just scratching down my back, but it wasn't digging in. He said kind of felt good. It was like got him in a bag and tied it up. Reset my trap over here, and I turned around and looked, and he said, my bag was running down through the woods. He said, I went and grabbed my bag. He said, you know what I did? He said, I grabbed a rope that I had, and I tied it up off the ground until I got done setting my traps. And I went back, got my bag, and took Bobcat back to the house. Said he caught a buzzard in a steel trap one time.
I caught one in a steel trap one time, and it laid an egg.
It's a bloop. How big is a buzzard egg?
Somewhere like that.
Dang.
Did you eat it?
No, I left it exactly where I found it. I didn't even touch it. I let the buzzard out, and it was okay. And it flew off real good. And that's how that went.
That's how that went. That's just how that happened.
Yeah. And that's all I got to say about the war in Vietnam.
So, is there anything else we was talking about or thinking about talking about? Y'all got anything to talk about? I tell you right now, I'm excited about this squirrel, this puppy. I'm looking forward to this fall, man. I'm looking forward to doing some squirrel hunting this fall.
Well, I think it's going to be a mite too small to pull the sled.
I said squirrel hunting. I didn't say nothing about pulling no sled.
I got faith in it, Bo.
Yeah, I do too. Hell, we got six of them.
Got a whole team.
Now, I'm a little excited myself.
Might have a kid, a little kid sled. might pull a little baby around with them little six feist.
Boys, I just so happened to have found up there in the shop a little tricycle. We could rig that up and put a kid on it.
No,
and see
Daniel
if
can ride.
What shop?
The up there behind my grandparents' house.
Oh, I thought you was talking about the shop at work.
No.
Dude, they bought a tricycle one time for a family day in 2007. I remember. I just started working there. And they had a tricycle for some little fun game because I remember Alan Campbell riding it around in the front office.
Alan Campbell?
This is a different one.
This one of these old steel ones.
Oh.
One of the old steel ones with the big wheel in the front and two little wheels in the back.
I think it's probably worth something.
Yeah, it's kind of rough.
It's probably still worth. That probably makes it worth more.
Oh, I want to ask. I have lost track of time. What's River looking like out there? Not that time. The other time.
I took her to the vet Thursday last week. Had her ultrasound. Couldn't find no heartbeats. So, I've been having to call people and tell them she ain't bred.
Dang.
And that's the second time she ain't caught. So, I guess I reckon I need to check, get her checked or something. I don't know.
Did they check anything?
Mm-mm.
But could they, if her progesterone levels are at a certain, she should be ovulating like.
I didn't get her checked while she was in heat. I got her checked when it was like 31 days, and he said at 25 you're supposed to be able to find a heartbeat. And he couldn't find none. So he wasn't convinced she's bred, so.
No, I was just talking about when she come in.
Yeah. He didn't get her checked, though.
That's what I'm saying. I would go get her checked just to see. That's crazy, man. Oh, we forgot reviews. We got three of these bad monkeys we got to read out.
Son of a gun.
I forgot about them. We are 30 minutes into this. This is going to be a long podcast.
They've been getting
you might
that
can
way.
Pull some of this out of this.
You want me to read this one from H555?
Sure do.
And then we'll get into this conversation with that we're about to get into. Okay. And just because it, I need to say something about it. It's like great podcast. Best podcast on the app. Keep up the good work, fellas. Also, Daniel, I've got a 2-year-old female blue tick that lost her bark too. Vet said it was laryngitis. Steroid shot and a good antibiotic had her back to normal in 10 days. What I want to say about that is she got a good steroid shot. I'll say it. I want to think, how can I say something that rhymes with it? Rex at mom and all? Rex at mom and I don't know how.
What the hell are you saying?
Trying to rhyme something with that steroid, the name of that steroid, without saying the name of that steroid that I gave my black and tan.
Well, that didn't sound nothing like it.
Rexomethasone. That's as close as I can get without saying the name of it.
They'll never figure that out.
All they got to do is change the very first word.
And you said she, and it's a he.
Who?
You.
Oh, he. He, whatever.
So you had me all confused. We was talking about a she. And then you start speaking in tongues.
You worry about what he identifies as.
They had a she, I got a he. But he probably did have laryngitis. I did mention something about it when I went to the vet, when I took Echo to the vet for her checkup, 2 weeks ago? He asked me about the cut. And I was like, well, I was telling him about that. Told him about him losing his voice. I'd already had him on antibiotics, so when that happened, I had just took him off of antibiotics the day before from the cut. He had finished those, and then all of a sudden his voice went out. So, but he was also on anti-inflammatories too. So, but he said for it to have responded to that steroid, that his vocal cords was inflamed. That's the only thing he could think of. And
do you know what itis means?
Itis?
Swollen. Like you get bronchitis, laryngitis.
Yeah. But that's what
it just means, swollen.
So that's what that ancient Chinese serum.
It's actually a Greek word.
It was a steroid shot that Smoke got. But
all right, what are you guys going to tell everybody? We give the dog a little bit of meth, okay?
We did not give him no meth.
Yeah, he did.
There is.
He gave that dog at least
Rex amphetamine.
There is methamphetamine.
What he's trying to say.
I'll tell you, it was dexamethasone. I may as well go ahead and say it without beating around. It's dexamethasone that I gave him a shot of. That's a steroid. Hey, you got that next one? Because yep. I'm curious about the Walks with Walkers comment.
He says, Walks with Walker, it says cattail. Cattails are cattails in Southeast Ohio, fellas.
But I didn't know if he meant like cattails were actual cattails or cattails that we know of that grow in swampy areas or cattails.
I'm pretty sure that's what he's talking about.
I'm
both,
be
like
honest with you, I don't even know what we're talking about. I know what a cattail is.
Yeah.
Did I say I didn't?
No.
Okay.
Because last episode was like, do people in other parts of the country call cattails cattails?
Okay.
And then he says cattails is cattails, so they cattails everywhere.
When I Googled cattails, if you don't know what it is, just Google cattails and look at the pictures, or whatever search engine you use, look at the pictures. You'll see cattails.
Look in an old child's book of a swamp or something about a frog, and there'd be cattails in it too, man.
Take your ass outside. Go outside, nerd, go.
So I was looking last night. I was like, are there wetlands in Southeast Ohio? Apparently, there is.
And then we got the last one. Says, it's from Squishy86. Says, love the show. Love what y'all are doing. I got a short story for y'all about hunting in the low country. I don't know if it's long enough for a phone call or not, but I'll send it to you on the Facebook messages.
Sounds like a podcast to me.
So, send it to us. Send it to me, I reckon.
Hey, we can stretch out anything, Bo. I mean, we've been rambling on here for at least 30 minutes about nothing.
Yeah, we have.
We can take a 19-inch fish and beat him up against the boat. 21-inch.
We'll make him legal, don't worry.
Man. Send me that message.
Stomp him down on him a little bit. Depending on how much weight you're willing to put on him.
I'll put some PSI on him. I'll put all he can bear, I promise you that.
Y'all ever seen that Andy Griffith episode where they had to stretch Barney a couple inches to get him certified for the
They hung them sandbags in the closet and hooked his head in this contraption and trapped his ankles in and picking him up.
That sounds like something we've done to Chris Williams.
I hope he was charging them a nickel to see Barney hang himself.
I remember that.
Anyway. Y'all ready to get into this episode? Because this is a conversation Dustin has not even heard yet. He was banqueting or something last week.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a breather.
We're going to get into this, and I don't know, I might have said it at the end, but if I didn't, y'all keep them dogs in the woods, and happy hunting, y'all.
Hey, if you're looking for a really good light, what's the best light on the market, Ryan?
It'd be a Bright Eyes. It smells so bright, it's been rumored that people have seen shit from the 1800s with it.
That's a rumor.
And I hear that heat seeker will burn a dingleberry off a Sasquatch ass at 200 yards.
It's pumping the daylight in. Now, for a really good light, go over to brighteyes.com. Check them out. Enter this promo code, HOUNDSTOOTH. It's one word, HOUNDSTOOTH. Enter that promo code, 5% off that light.
I mean, they sell their self.
Yeah, absolutely.
They go on that website, they'll be impressed. They buy one, they'll be even more impressed.
Use that promo code, HOUNDSTOOTH. One word, HOUNDSTOOTH. Put that in, get your new heat seeker. We appreciate it.
Hey, how are you?
We're making it. We we got is me and the one of the other co-hosts, Ryan Dustin. He has a I forgot what he said, a banquet or dinner or something he had to go to this evening, and he wasn't gonna be able to make it with us to record. So it's just
us two flunkies.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for asking me.
Oh, no problem, man. I do got to ask you, because I've heard you pronounce it at the beginning of your podcast, but I don't remember it. How do you pronounce your name?
It's Philippe. So it's like Philip, but it's the French version because my mom is from Belgium.
Okay, and I heard you say this like on your last episode. Where's your dad from?
He's from England, so he lives there. He was here when I was a kid, but when my parents got a divorce, he moved back to England.
I got you. That was what was throwing me off. I couldn't remember what you said because I was trying to tell Ryan a while ago. I was like, man, I know he just said it on like his last episode, and I was like, I don't remember if he said like Bulgaria or something. I was like, man, I was like, he said it started with a B.
Oh yeah, Belgium. Yeah. It's a very small country. I think it's like the size of Maryland, and they speak two different languages. They speak French and then they speak Flemish. But my mom is from the French side. And you guys might find this interesting. They do like a lot of wild boar hunting because they've got this whole area called the Ardennes, which is kind of like, it's similar to Appalachia. Like it has like a mining history. And it's very wooded. And like in medieval times, it was like a wilderness. But even today, they do a lot of boar hunting there. And I think they use like Yog terriers. It's all like driven. Like,
I think it's one of them places. They do like a ceremony and layout. They lay out all the pigs at the end of it and like brush.
Oh, yeah.
They have a dinner. It's pretty nice.
Oh, yeah.
It looks very fun.
I want to experience that one day.
It looks great.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to do something like that. I think it would be a rush just to go to like any foreign country and just like hunt with dogs, whatever it is, whether it's a tree animal or bay it up, whatever. It'd be cool to just do anything like that in a different country.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, because you guys know, if you know, looking at some of my artwork and listening a little bit to my podcast, that I'm still super new to these things. So, like, whenever you have a new experience, it's, like, just so incredible, right? So, yeah. I'm sure for you guys, since you've probably been doing this forever, like, any kind of new experience has got to be kind of amazing.
My dog caught a coyote on the ground. And I thought it was a bobcat for a little bit.
Wow.
It was pretty awesome. I'd love to catch a few more bobcats and not coyotes.
And it didn't like F up your dog?
No, my dog F'd it up.
Oh, wow.
To be fair, it did look like, he said it did look like it had been like hit by a car or something that had slowed it down. It was like broke down in the back.
I don't know if my dog did it or if it had been hit by a car. He's broke down in the back end, but he's running for like a mile and a half.
Wow.
I just don't
think. So are you guys, are both in South Carolina?
Yes.
Yes, sir. He lives, we're at my house right now. We normally record at Dustin's house, but since he had that dinner, we're at my house. And Ryan lives, what do you live, a mile and a half down the road?
Yeah, probably 2 miles by the road and 3/4 of a mile by the way to Crow Flies.
Okay. Are you coastal or is it marshy or flatland? Well,
we live in the Piedmont. And so
it's kind of like foothills too. We got rolling hills and gullies and pine trees and thickets and swamp and
so you can go like
hardwoods.
You can go 45 minutes north of us and start really like up near Traveler's Rest, Greenville, and start like getting into the mountains.
Or you can go 45 minutes to the east and look like you on the coastal plain, but it really ain't.
Yeah.
But it'll look like it is sandy and the trees are shorter. It's thick as shit.
Gotcha. It's probably a lot. I grew up in Virginia, so Virginia has a big Piedmont area too, so it's probably kind of similar.
Yeah,
but probably a lot not as swampy and not as hot as probably you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, it feels like it's miserable. The one thing that saves us in the wintertime is the mountains. like from when all that cold air starts blowing across down like Missouri, Ohio, and all that, when it hits the mountains, a lot of times it deflects a lot of that, that we don't get like a lot of the storms and stuff that they get today before they get to the mountains.
It would be cool to get some snow every once in a while, though.
Yeah, I believe I read something the other day that said South Carolina is the only state that didn't get snow this year.
Hmm. Okay.
That's crazy.
Ain't it though? Florida got snow and we didn't.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know they got anything.
Might have got like a little flurry. Hmm. Yeah, we didn't get none. So
we need a good snow.
I would like to see a good snow every now and then. But man, I'm curious. I don't even know. I was thinking earlier today, I was like, how did I come across his podcast? It is Our Numinous Nature.
Yes. I picked a tough word.
It is. I had to practice it a couple times because I was getting tongue fumbled up. But
it's a tough word. It's definitely a tough word. It's a little over the top.
So all that stuff, that artwork that I see on Instagram, that stuff that you drew?
Yes, sir. So that's my job. I'm a professional illustrator, and I'm so blessed. I get to work from home. So I mainly do illustrations for even kind of stuff like you guys do. I work a lot for just kind of small businesses, whether they're like a homesteaders or a little farm or like I've done t-shirt designs for small hunting companies, stuff like that. Or I've been hired by like nonprofits that are like working with like agroforestry that need illustrations to kind of like tell their message. And so that's kind of the work that I do. So I'm super blessed. I get I don't have a boss. I can work from home.
Yeah. And you're like really talented too. Cause there's some of those, I was wondering what magazine, I was like, where did he get these old vintage looking trapping pictures and stuff from? That looks like they were hand. Now I know you drew them. That's impressive because they look really good.
Oh,
I thought they come. I'm gonna show you when we get.
Thank you.
I thought you had got them from like an old vintage like Field and Stream magazine or something from like 60, 70 years ago.
I feel like I'm gonna want one now.
Well, I love that stuff. I love that stuff so much. Like I love the illustrations that are like in books from like the 1900s or late 1800s. And I love that stuff so much. So that's like what, or even like the old trapper manuals had such cool, like fur bearer illustrations on the front. So I just like, that's definitely my inspiration. And I'm trying to make my work look closer and closer to that.
I pulled up one to show Ryan.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That is good, isn't it?
It is.
Thank you.
Let me see that again. Hold on.
Let me find another one. There's another. There's a bunch of them, dude. Like, there's one. You did the one with the working dogs all have fun. That's your drawing?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And the way I do it is I actually use ink. So I use like an old, not like a feather, like the, not like the, old presidents or the founding fathers, but kind of similar. Like I use a pen. Mm-hmm. That just has like a metal tip, mm-hmm. and you dip the metal tip in a jar of ink, and then you draw like with the ink. And you got to know how to do it right, or you'll just like, you'll F up your drawing because a big droplet of ink will fall off it. But it's kind of cool. It's not a pen. It's not like a modern pen or anything like that, or a marker. It's all done with this dipping ink.
So do you sell like prints of these?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. So I get hired a lot, but then I also have a bunch of stuff that I sell. Like
do you have like a
prints.
Store or something?
Yeah, yeah.
I've got an online
shop.
You guys will advertise that because I'm not going to lie. I'm going to have to get some. I know several different people that would be like, that's pretty awesome.
Yes. I just went to your link tree to see if that was a place on there. There is a shop part on the link tree.
Yes.
Okay. I tell you what I'm going to do. And when this podcast comes out, I will put a link. If you want to just give me a link, or I can maybe copy this link tree link and I could put it in the show notes.
Well, that'll be very kind. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem, man. So
are we recording right now?
Yeah, I've been recording since we hopped on.
Sweet.
just kind of free flowing with it. And right now, hold on, I got to put my phone down because I've been scrolling through your doggone Instagram page.
Like Wendell would like get them, like how his house was set up, how he had all them old.
Yeah,
he just had different signs and stuff, vintage stuff, and then he had different vintage posters like that. Yeah,
who did?
A guy we know. He don't live far from here.
Oh,
but he
and you know,
I know several different people that's probably gonna have to have one of them.
What was you about to say?
I was just gonna say, you know, I'm new to your guys' podcast, but I love what you're doing. I think it's so cool that you're mixing the hunting stuff with people's weird experiences. Like, I just love that that's what you're doing. And, you know, I've listened to a handful, but the main one was the one you sent me with the guy in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Just like hearing him, like, you know, this, he's a real kind of woodsman. He's like he's a rougher kind of guy, and hearing him like almost start to cry telling that story, I'm like, holy shit, this is real.
Yeah. That's what I tell people. I'm like, hey, whether you believe in it or not, he's seen something, damn it, that changed his life.
Exactly.
Yeah, we got blessed with that one. We had no idea. That was our second. That was our first interview with anybody.
And wow. Then,
yeah, that's like the best one.
And we was like blown away because we was not expecting that. We was all looking at each other like, oh, my God, what is happening right now? And so, but – you put your podcast out like bi-weekly?
I try to do every 2 weeks, but sometimes with work and stuff, I can't keep up to it. But yes, I try to.
I want to say I haven't listened to the second one yet, but for some reason I come across when you was doing the Edgar Allan Poe stuff.
Okay.
And cause like Edgar Allan Poe is probably, if I had to pick like a favorite author, outside of anything modern, Edgar Allan Poe is probably my favorite poet / writer. I don't know why people always give me weird looks when I say that, because I'm like a redneck from South Carolina. And I'm like, I was like, how could you not like The Raven?
Oh, my God, yeah. Well, boy, amen, brother.
It's probably really because you're from Whitmire, and they just surprised you can damn read.
That might be what it is.
Damn, this boy can read.
Sorry. But, yeah. So that's kind of how I got interested in yours. And then you had the dude that was the beekeeper and the coon hunt. And that one was, like, super interesting.
Shit, I've been tracking bees for 2 weeks now. I know which way they damn coming from.
Yeah, that guy is a real hoot. And I just saw him this morning to drop off a brush shredder that he needs to fix for me. And he was saying that he thinks he's going to get a coon dog again. So I felt pretty pumped. I feel like the podcast made him kind of look back at some of his, you know, fond memories of coon hunting. He's going to get another dog.
Heck yeah.
Yep. Well, tell him that the LED lights are awesome nowadays.
Okay.
Yeah. Way much better. He was talking about like the wheat lights, and I was like, "That is a long. Yes. That's a long, long time ago."
Between that and the Garmin, he's gonna feel weird when he hits the woods.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Like,
so
he needs to try him out one of them bright eyes lights.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
One of them bright eyes.
Right.
So what got you? I noticed, like, I don't know if y'all just do it for fun, but like when you were squirrel hunting, you got like this pouch and stuff, and you kind of like look very like 1800s.
Well, I've always liked dressing kind of crazy. So, you know, hunting, I love old stuff. Like, I love old photographs, and I like wool, and I like furs, and I just kind of have collected like a lot of everything I buy is like secondhand from thrift stores, or, you know, all my clothes is from eBay or thrift stores. So I just like the way it looks. And that's just, I guess, how I dress. But
it's cool looking for real. Cause I was, when I found you after like listening to your podcast, then I was like, yo, this dude is like so unique.
I like that old stuff too.
That's a good thing.
Yeah,
I'll never find nothing in a thrift store to fit my big ass.
Well, eBay.
You might do on eBay.
Yeah, I mean, you can get amazing like winter wool clothes for like $30. You know, I get wool pants that I wear hunting all season. I get, you know, $30, $40 wool rich pants on eBay. Incredible.
I'm dressing up like the 1800s going down the river next year.
Well, tell everybody, tell us how you got into podcasting and what made you want to start choosing, because this is like technically it's not a coon hunting podcast. So just to let everybody that's going to be listening, because I guess our audience is predominantly coon hunters, but
okay,
but it's still just like a unique podcast to listen to because it's all kind of different stuff. Just going back, I went back through your, and I just been like picking episodes to listen to through your catalog.
He's got a squirrel dog.
Yep. Well, I'm gonna get to that. I just want to know how he got into like what his podcast about and why he chose that and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, the reason it started was because just a little background about me. I grew up in the suburbs, so you know, 0 to 18, I grew up in the suburbs of Virginia. Then I moved up. I went to college, like VCU, and then I tried to go. I went to film school in Brooklyn. So I moved all the way to the big city, lived in Manhattan, and I was there until I was 30. And I had tried to have like a film career. You know, I wanted to make movies, but it costs like, you know, to make a movie, even a small independent movie, costs like $1 million. So you have to get people. You have to get people to give you money. And I was never good at that. So I was just, you know, we had little jobs. Like I did music videos. I did like documentary type stuff for companies, but I kind of hated it. And I didn't see my film career moving forward. And I just like totally wanted to change my life. So I just started drawing, and I used to draw as a little kid. And I just started drawing and drawing and drawing and catching up for like the 12 years that I hadn't drawn at all. And anyways, eventually I started getting hired online, and I got hired by a nonprofit whose focus is like medicinal plants in Appalachia. So like ginseng, like a lot of the stuff that the old time root diggers would go dig, like ginseng, black cohosh, golden seal. These are all like wild medicinal plants.
Right.
And, anyways, they hired me. I started doing a ton of work for them. And then they said, hey, do you want to rent a cabin on my property down in Virginia? And I said, well, how much? And they said $600 a month. And I said, well, that's how much I pay for like my one tiny little shithole room in Brooklyn. Hell yeah. So I moved to this cabin, and that's when I moved to the country. So that was 7 years ago. And once I got to the country, one of the first things I wanted to do was learn how to hunt. So I've been hunting now for 7 years. And so right from the start, I'm meeting all these new people. I'm asking for all their stories. And I'm just like meeting a lot of locals in that part of Virginia. And people would tell me the wildest and most amazing stories. And I was like, I've got to start recording these. So I felt like I had to make the podcast just to record like some of the older people around me's wild and amazing stories. And that's where it started. And then just, you know, I guess it's been going for like 4 years now or something. And now it's like, I'm just kind of pursuing more of my interests, whether it's like history, like different historical topics, or like Edgar Allan Poe, one of my favorite authors, or just like a hunting topic, or just like a crazy wild guy, like that guy about the bee hunting. It's just kind of like a super eccentric guy, but just totally awesome. And no one would ever hear, you know, no one would ever hear this guy's stories other than the people who live around here. If I don't record it, you know?
Yeah, it's a super cool idea.
I got to listen to that bee hunting one now.
he's a hoot.
It was a good one.
So yeah, that's what got all that started.
And I listened to, I'm not exactly sure when the other one come out with the last one. What was the dude? Was it Droop Mountain? Is that the name of the, or something of that nature?
Yep. So that's a state park / Civil War battlefield kind of in the county. And so the guy I interviewed was the past superintendent, and he's just like a super passionate guy. You know, he loves, you know, bow hunting, finding fossils, finding arrowheads, metal detecting on the Civil War battlefield, stuff like that.
Yeah, it was a good one. I liked them hearing the different stuff, especially like different ghost stories involved with Civil War stuff.
That is freaking awesome. Yes.
We have a lot of history around here like that, too.
Yes, and I want to say it was him that I learned something different as far as why West Virginia's perspective, because it was always like down south, it was kind of like, yeah, West Virginia, they sided with the North because they didn't want to get involved in the – they were kind of just like as – but I'm trying to be nice with my words here. They didn't really have like the
rich planting class who were like, you know, the main slaveholders. They didn't really have that kind of culture in the mountains because it's more mountaineering, small homesteads. Yeah. So that's like a kind of another reason that they kind of broke off.
Yeah, it was like to get away from, it was a reason, more of a reason to get away from Virginia.
Exactly.
Than it's anything. Like,
it seems like, yeah, kind of like, yeah, exactly. It was like a good motivation for them to kind of break off and be able to do their own thing.
But then I got to thinking about it, and I was like, there was a lot of rich plantations in Virginia. That's where George Washington's stuff was. I mean, so you did have a lot of rich plantations in parts of Virginia.
Oh, yeah, and along the Chesapeake Bay. And a lot of those places are super beautiful to go visit. You know, I like history, so I like seeing those old, you know, houses still preserved because a lot of them are incredibly beautiful. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely that history in Virginia for sure.
So, but how long have you had this this squirrel dog you got? And is he a mountain feist?
Yes. So, it's...
Oh, no.
Uh-oh, hold up. Hello?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Okay. It broke up right when you started talking about it.
Okay. So, yes, she is a mountain feist.
Okay. She is a mountain feist.
Oh.
Yep.
She looks good.
Where'd you get her from?
Thank you. So, I've never even had a dog before. So, we always had cats growing up. So, I've never had a dog. And so, my fiance now, when she came to live with me in that cabin, when I moved to the country, I moved to this cabin. We were there for 5 years, and now we live in West Virginia. And we're about 3 hours away from the last place. But while we were in that cabin, my fiance kept saying, like, hey, we got to get a dog. And, well, I was like, well, if we're getting a dog, it's got to be a hunting dog. And so, you know, I don't have any kind of like cool history about this or like family friends. The only reason I know what a squirrel dog is because of that first meat eater episode that they did with Kevin Murphy back in Kentucky. So that was the first time I've ever even seen what a squirrel dog is. And so, you know, having that in the back of my head, I was like, well, if we're getting a dog, we're going to get a dog I can hunt with. So, you know, honestly, I just was like, I just want a really pretty dog. If it hunts a little bit, great. But I just want a really beautiful little dog. So I just started looking at all the squirrel forums and kind of just found how far can I drive. And we found Buckley Farm Kennels.
I told you what I thought that dog was.
Go ahead. You knew it?
Yeah.
He told me he thought it was a Buckley bred dog just by looking at
it. Yes. Yep. So, yeah, I call him Mr. Buckley. But, yeah, Steve Buckley, it's one of his dogs out in Kentucky. So that was about a 7-hour drive for us. But I mean, we've become friends. I've gone hunting with him, and we love our little dog. And during the season, I tried, because I told you I can work from home, I tried to go out like 4 days, 5 days a week, you know, and just trudge around the national forest trying to get mountain squirrels. You know, there're definitely less squirrels here. There's definitely less squirrels in the mountains than back where we were, kind of in the rolling Blue Ridge Mountain of Virginia. But in the mountains, they're a little tougher. Like, you might have to climb an entire, go straight up a mountain for one of these. Yeah. And then find out it got into its damn hole.
I'm cutting this damn tree down. I think y'all's squirrel population depends on a lot of, like, the mass that you're, like, the acorn mass. the mass crop.
Yes. Yes.
Because I hear a lot of people up that way.
Say like I had a guy.
Yeah, I had a guy. He's like, how's y'all? It was actually where I got pretty from. He asked how our squirrels done this year. And I'm like, man, we booming every year. You can't kill them all.
Yeah. Like we have.
I've tried.
We have so many squirrels. Well, yeah, it's ridiculous.
That's awesome.
I wish we had a raccoon population to the level of the squirrel population we got. I don't know. How many squirrels you think we got? 15 to 1, 20 to 1?
What, as far as coons?
Squirrels to coon.
Shit, that's probably 50 squirrels to 1 coon.
It ain't no joke, dude. I can sit on my front yard, and I can just sit on my front porch and just count across the road at my brother-in-law's house.
Probably count 20, 30 over there.
I bet you I counted 10 a little while ago running through trees.
Probably really 20 or 30 over there.
Yeah. It's squirrels. Ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah, so like where I live in West Virginia, in the Allegheny Highlands, I have only seen one squirrel out of the windows of our property. Like I've seen it multiple times, but I only see this squirrel like once every 2 months or something. Whereas back when we lived in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, I mean, we'd have squirrels eating the side of the house. Yeah. You know, I would just see them. Yeah, every time you look out the window, you see a damn squirrel. So there's just way less in these higher mountains. Like, I really think so.
So how old is that little dog yet?
She must be almost three.
Okay.
Because we've had 3 seasons. We've had 3 seasons.
Heck yeah.
How old is Purdy? Your dog.
Going on 4, I think.
Okay. That's a mountain feist?
Yes, sir.
Awesome.
Yeah, he just bred that sucker, and I can't wait to get one.
I got 6 puppies.
They're just like my, you know, I'm sure people when they get a dog, they just like become so in love with that breed and they want to kind of like stick to that breed. But I just think that feists are like the funniest things ever. Like I love that they're
a good choice as far as not ever having a dog before and wanted a hunting dog.
Yeah.
God, I think that was great to hear.
The best choice you could have made.
I love that they're cute, but they're also like totally ferocious.
Yeah, that dog will probably treat coons, man, if you hadn't already treated one in the daytime with her.
Yeah, I was thinking about taking it on this coon hunt I went on last week. I was thinking about bringing her because my buddy out here, he is mainly a bear hunter. His name's Jacob. And he's mainly a bear hunter, and he always brings his feist. And he brings the feist on the bear hunts, and the feist has actually done some of the main work, like the main treeing, getting the bear up into the tree. So he brings it coon hunting. So I was thinking about bringing my feist, but I'm just so nervous about the coon, like, you know, biting her to shit.
I wouldn't be nervous about that coon. I'd be more nervous about coyotes or something, you know. If you got a tracking collar on her and can watch her, I wouldn't be nervous at all. I'd just take her. As long as you wasn't cutting her loose with, like, big hounds and they getting out of there, you know, 2 miles or something crazy. Little feist dog is going to kind of stay tight to you, I feel like. I don't think she's going to go
far.
Like 600 or less?
Yeah.
Or closer?
Totally.
Yeah, way closer. 400 or 500 yards.
Yeah, mine doesn't really go beyond 200 anymore.
Yeah. And I don't know if y'all got a lot of gravel roads. I don't know if you ever tried to road hunt her or not. I don't really know how y'all's land's laid out, but you could probably road hunt.
I've never. Yes, my buddy does that and some of the other guys, but I don't really like that. It's just preference. I want to be in the woods. I want to walk around, and I want to sweat, and I want to I don't want to be sitting down. I get too, like, angsty.
I got you. I know what you mean.
Oh, yeah.
But them doggone mountains. Woo.
Yes.
It's no joke. It's no joke. Some of Appalachia is seriously steep.
I can hear some old dude just rode by my house on a tractor. I can hear it in my headphones. Was that Brad?
Yeah, that was Brad.
Okay. That was Brad Baldwin, the guy he recorded with us, him and another dude, maybe about this time last year.
Okay.
But
I got to listen to that one.
He just rode by my house on a tractor, and I could hear it in my headphones. Well, nice. Tell me about this coon hunt, the one coon hunt before last Thursday that you went on with basically –
I forgot about this, yeah.
Yeah. It was two non-traditional coon hunting dogs.
Oh, okay. Yes. So, yeah, I've got a buddy. He's in Virginia. He hunts. He's from Russia. So he's got a super thick accent. And I've only hunted with him twice, actually. I've only hung out with him three times. But we've hunted twice. And he has these dogs called Laikas.
Right.
And I actually did a podcast with a Russian guy, an old man out here in Virginia, who's like one of the first guys to like really import Laikas from Russia. And I guess in America, they're mainly used for squirrel.
What's this guy's name that you went with?
Alex Kershev.
Kershev? Okay. He was on a podcast, Tree Talking Time, with our buddy Ben Sheets.
Yep.
Yes.
That's what I was thinking. That
he was on there with Ben Sheets. We know Ben.
Yes. So, yeah, he has these Laikas, which the history behind them is pretty cool. They're considered, like, primitive dogs. And, like, the native people in Russia and Siberia would hunt with these dogs. And they would hunt, like, bear and moose and basically anything that these native people needed to eat, these dogs would hunt for them. So, yeah, Alex, I think, is, like, one of the first guys, it seems like, in America to try these dogs on bear. So he's been having a lot of success with those Laikas on bear, but I joined him for a coon hunt like a year ago. I joined him for a coon hunt with the Laikas, and that was my first ever coon hunt. So I didn't have anything to compare it to. I'd never been on a hound coon hunt. So it was just awesome to just be out at night. It was a full moon. There was like, we were on National Forest and there was like an abandoned farmhouse. So just the whole ambiance was cool. Just to be in this old farmhouse with our headlights and to be able to walk through the fields in the forest with your headlight off, just under the full moon. Just so cool.
It's awesome. That's my favorite time of the year too. When all the leaves are off the trees and the moon. Last night was a pretty night. Me and Daniel hunted.
It makes it rough hunting when the bow cones are rutting. Them full moons, they add a little extra. It makes it suck a little bit.
I mean, the guy with the Laikas, I seen some TikToks he had too, but I don't see him no more.
Is he the one? There was one dude that when Ben Sheets talked to him that he goes from all, he was going to all kind of states and to hunt, hit the bear seasons up. Yeah. That was him?
Yes.
So it was two guys on there. I was making sure this was the right one.
The older guy he's talking about that imported them, we listened to a podcast about him too when he was.
Yes.
And he talked about how they also started trading fur with like Asia or China or whatever.
Oh, yeah. His name is Vladimir.
Yeah, he makes them sound
real
good.
I've heard of that one, too. I think I've listened to him.
We was going somewhere when we listened to that.
Yes.
Like Winter Classic or somewhere. It makes them sound really nice.
Oh, he was on Tree Talking. He was on your friend's podcast.
Okay. That might have been where we, because I know I've listened to that one, or at least I think I have. I know it sounds familiar.
At the squirrel hunt the other day, they said there's a guy over near Rose Hill, and a guy said, he's like, they was talking about different people hunting. And he said, there's a guy with them Laika dogs that hunts over there too. So there's somebody around here that's got them. And he said, I don't know if they're any good or not, but he's always got a bunch of squirrels. They're probably good.
They're probably good.
They seem to be meat dogs for sure.
I love that term, meat dogs.
That is a how would you define that? That's a term we use for a dog that is just a meat dog. Like if whether they treat coons,
multiple species,
possums,
good about having the bear there too.
Yeah, they just good meat dogs.
I love that. Yeah, if you need food, this dog is a tool for your food.
Meat hound.
Yeah, that's kind of what it sounds like. We've talked about it before, and our question was our hot summers, how would they do with that thick fur in our hot summers? So if there's a guy around here.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, obviously I don't know that much about it other than when I interviewed Vladimir, but yes, they're from a place with snow, you know, and the dogs would live outside and just be, you know, living out in the snow. So there definitely might be rough on them to be hot, but I'm not sure.
We did kind of get off topic. We didn't get into his coon hunt.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about his coon hunt.
I was thinking you was telling me about him hunting out of a boat or something.
He had a Laika, however they pronounce it, and a feist y'all went hunting with. And they treed the coon and They did. Y'all trail coon that night?
When I hunted with Alex, yes. That was last year, last March, under that full moon. We got two coons that night, and I think that was the limit in that part of Virginia. I think it's two per party. Mm-hmm. We got two coons, and yeah, that was my first ever hunt. That was awesome.
It's probably
and then,
way better than going with a hound.
What? Tell me about what y'all go with last Thursday when y'all went.
Yes, so last Thursday was with my buddy Jacob, who he's out here in West Virginia, and he is, you know, he's a houndsman from birth, right? So like his dad, probably grandparents, his brother, they're all bear guys, you know, they're all bear hunters. So, you know, he's got the whole, well, him and his brother both have a bunch of hounds. I don't know exactly which breeds they were. And then they've got Feists. And, so last week I went just with Jacob, and there was just like a few days left in the Virginia season. And actually both of his hounds are pretty, they're both really young. They're like definitely like kind of, they're like two. So they were kind of young and in training, and he's really only had them on bear. So not much on the coon hunting. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we just went to a spot kind of on the, West Virginia, Virginia line, and we kind of walked it for about 4 miles, and there's actually like a big dam over there, and we kind of walked on the perimeter of National Forest and didn't have anything happen, but it's just beautiful to be out under the stars. And it was about 11 o'clock. And then he said, well, you want to keep going? I was like, yeah. So we drove probably 2 or 3 miles back into the mountains. And then we just hunted this creek, and his dogs were hunting pretty close. I think he says because he's been hunting a lot with Alex, and the dogs hunt, the Leicas hunt close, that these hounds have been kind of raised hunting close. So it was kind of a fun and funky hunt, but here we are down in this back in the mountains and miles away from any houses or roads. And we're walking this creek, and the dogs are starting to get excited, including that little Feist. I had a really bright headlamp, and I saw it down on the ground, like, I don't know, like 100 yards away. I just see its eyes, and I'm like, holy shit, there's the coon. And so Jacob got really excited and started running in that direction, and it just disappeared on us. And finally I spotted it with my eyes. I finally could see it in the top of the tree, its eyes. And I thought they were stars, but then I realized it was the eyes. But I think his young hounds got a little tripped up, maybe because the track was so fresh and because we got so excited, we went straight for it.
Yep.
But you know, they were barking, and then, you know, he's still training them. So once we found it, he kind of just went in a training mode and just got them on the tree and got them barking and just, you know, letting them know what they should be doing. And so I did get that one. And that one I'm going to eat for sure. Like sometimes when I trap, I don't eat any of the coons that are like next to a road or anything like that. Like I don't want some gross ass scavenger. But if they're deep in the mountains like that, I'm definitely going to eat it.
Heck yeah. So you just got that one dog, right?
Me? Yeah.
It sounds like you got the fever. You'll have a few more dogs before it's over with.
Hey, give a shout out. In some of them videos, you were squirrel hunting with some other guys that they look like they might have had a mountain feist or something, a brown one or something like that.
Well, I've actually, you know, because I'm new to this and there's not many people out here hunting squirrels. So I've kind of just been doing it by myself. So it's really only been learning from Jacob, and I send text messages to Buckley, the breeder, just asking him questions when she was a little puppy. And then I went out to Kentucky and hunted with Buckley, and that was a lot of fun. But yeah, so I've just been learning just by being outside as much as possible, you know.
Did she start pretty easy on squirrels?
I have just been so new to this that I was just asking people questions, and basically people were telling me, it's just going to happen. Like, you just need to be out in the woods and it will just happen. So she was 4.5 months old. We were, you know, in National Forest in West Virginia. And, you know, then it just suddenly happened one day. And, you know, I did do some of the training, like where you put the squirrel tail on the end of a fishing pole and kind of get her excited about that. But it was definitely natural. And then ever since, it's just been, you know, going in the woods as much as I can. But it's natural for sure.
It's natural. My little,
what is it, Sophie?
Miniature weenie dog just started barking.
Oh, get little him, Sophie.
But yeah, that sounds like it was pretty easy. Ooh. By 4.5 months old, it sounds like it was it wasn't that hard. Because Ryan's Mountain Feist, she started treating squirrels, what,
She's 3.5 months old.
Before she was 9 months old, how many squirrels had you knocked out in her that first year?
I think it was 167.
Exactly. Exactly. That's so awesome.
Yeah. It was like, she wasn't even like 9 months old yet.
She was tiny.
That is awesome.
It was 167 is what we put on the tailgate the first year. And that was all by
That's
herself.
Awesome.
She wasn't
That's
even
awesome.
Big enough to wear a tracking collar. I had to put, because I had big collars for my hounds, you know.
Yeah.
I put a little collar on her that would fit her. And then I put the tracking collar on her and zip tied a tracking collar to that little collar where it wouldn't fall off. And that's how I
that's
put a
hilarious.
Tracking collar on her.
That's hilarious. They're so cool. They're just the coolest little dogs.
Hey, I like them myself.
Does yours climb trees and stuff? Because Betty will like go like 20 feet up into a tree.
She ain't been that high yet, but she will try to. I've seen her, like if there was a big oak tree kind of split, two different ones, she got up in the fork of it, but it wouldn't put
her high. And has she ever caught one on the ground? Because I've had that happen.
I've had her come close, but I hadn't had her. We've wounded some, you know, when she catch them on the ground. That's happened quite a good bit.
It was fun because it was the one day that I went out and I got to the spot. And I open up my gun case, and I brought one bullet. And I was like, damn it. And so I was like, I guess we're just going to walk around. And so we walk around, and I see the squirrel jump out of the top of the tree, you know, when she bombs out of the tree and hits the ground running. And she caught that one and killed it. And I was like, oh, my. I was like, wow.
Meat dog.
Like, this is the real deal. Like, I didn't even have to shed a bullet, and my dog has caught us dinner. I'm like, this is just as cool as it gets.
Will your fiance eat squirrel?
Oh yeah, she has the only thing that she got weirded out, and I did too, was bobcat. But she has eaten beaver, muskrat, bear, deer, turkey.
Did y'all eat the bobcat?
Yeah, we did about 3 meals, and then we started getting weirded out, so we stopped.
Man, y'all should have tried the backstrap first.
Okay,
it's the best critter I've ever ate.
Yeah. See, I'm going to try it again.
Yeah, y'all might have ate the legs. The back strap is like really white and looks like the most delicate piece of pork chop you've ever seen. And it's so good.
It I got to try again.
Took the flavor of whatever you seasoned it with, kind of how it did for me.
I think we just got weirded out because she was there on the morning I caught that one trapping. And she was there checking the trap line with me. So she watched the dispatch and she watched the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I think she saw how aggressive this bobcat was. Like it wanted, when you catch them in the trap, I've only caught two. Sometimes they like cower and just kind of want to hide or they want to kill you. And this one that she saw, like it literally, it lunged. It was a back foot catch and it lunged onto my .22 rifle. And it latched onto the rifle, and it scratched. I have scratches along the side of the stock of my Ruger 10/22 that are from the bobcat.
Dang.
And it had the barrel in its mouth. Just like, it was so intense.
Hey, so the last podcast we just done was with a guy from Cuba.
Wow. And
we joked about on another podcast about how good bobcat was. My buddy's wife tried it. She's like, that's the best thing y'all've ever had me try. And they had two house cats, and one of their house cats was sitting there. I was like, it's so good, it makes you wonder what that sumbitch tastes like, don't it? And she was like, shut up. And, is he still there? Did we lose him?
Hello?
We lost him.
Hold on.
Oh, I said.
Oh, no, you hear him now.
Yep, I said that's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
So this guy from Cuba told us this story, and then he was like, it is good. The house cat's good, too. He said he ate a house cat.
No.
Yep.
He said they ate one in Cuba. Says slow cook it with some whatever.
No.
He said. He says so good.
He said it is good. I believe him too. You eat the backstrap of that bobcat and you'll be like, we won't throw no more of these away.
Okay. Now I know.
Well, now here's what I want. I wanted to talk to you about this too, because it really kind of caught my interest the first time I heard you say it, and I haven't heard you really tell the whole story. Just kind of briefly touch on it, but I'm super intrigued by it. The whatever you had happened to you bear hunting.
Yes. Yes.
I'm kind of curious about that.
Okay. Would you guys mind, like, just shooting the shit for 1 second? I can run and use the bathroom real quick and then get back on.
Yeah, that's fine. Cool with that. That's fine.
Okay, I'll be 1 minute.
All right.
Hey, with hunting season right here upon us and everybody getting their hunting stuff all lined up, getting their boots, their chaps, that with waders, their lights, anything, go check out Havoc Hunt Supply. They got all the things you need, all your needs. They got badass apparel. They got spill-proof water bowls. They got chaps. They got Garmins. They got thermals. And with these hard economic times, all you got to do is put this promo code in. It's at Havoc10 to save 5% on all your purchase, your total purchase. You want to support the show? Go to Havoc Hunt Supply's website. Put that promo code in when you're checking out. Save you some money, man. Or get you a hoodie. Get you a hat.
Get some shit you don't need. I mean,
a squalder.
Hell, it's hunting season, bro.
Need you a squalder.
Prepare yourself to wreak havoc.
You can get you a squalor. Anything you need right there, Havoc Hunt Supply. Hit them up. 5% off your purchase. Havoc 10. 10.
Okay.
So I told Ryan you was about to blow his mind, because after you tell it, I'll tell you what it reminded me of.
Okay. Well, okay. So, you know, just a little bit of a background. Like, you know, I love that you guys are interested in all the cryptid stuff, and I love hearing those episodes. But, and I love hearing that stuff. Like, I've interviewed, like, a cryptid, you know, paranormal investigator, cryptid guys out here in West Virginia. And I love hearing about it, but I don't necessarily know what to think or believe. Like, I don't really believe in Bigfoot, you know, stuff like that. I don't, you know, I have a lot of friends that talk about, like herbalist women who are very spiritual, who talk about, like, fairies. And I, like, they definitely have some powerful stories, but I don't really know, like what does that even mean? And I don't even know if I believe in that kind of thing. But I definitely believe in stuff like ghosts. And I'm starting to believe, because I've had a whole bunch of ghost experiences, like in Civil War battlefields in Manassas, Virginia. I've had ghost experiences like in the catacombs in Paris, where you're surrounded by like tens of thousands of skulls of, you know, the people of Paris. I've had an intense ghost experience down there. So I believe in ghosts. And I'm starting to believe in, like, past lives. You know, I've listened to a lot of people's past life stories. There's some pretty amazing documentaries about reincarnation and past life. And it even, like, places like the University of Virginia, UVA in Charlottesville, Virginia, like, they even have a department there where they study past lives. Mm-hmm. And so I believe in this kind of stuff. And I think the past life is pretty intriguing. Like, I don't have a feel certainty regarding that, but it's been in the back of my head for a while now. So anyhow, last winter, I think it was the last day of the Virginia season for bear. And I went with some of my houndsman friends, Ariel and Taylor, and I had gone with them 2 times before and didn't even see a bear. And they're pretty new, you know, they've only been doing it for a few years. So they've been kind of training their pack of hounds. And, so yeah, this is the third time, and we start out, and it's just me and Taylor, and everyone's kind of broken up into groups. And, so this is like, national forest. This is like designated wilderness. This is like pretty serious mountains for Virginia. And, you know, this is Appalachia. And so me and Taylor start together, and I've got two of his hounds on a leash, and he's got two. And we just head up this mountain, and he goes so damn fast because he actually used to be like an endurance athlete. So I'm just trying to keep up with him. I've got a heavy ass backpack on with a ton of water. So I'm just kind of, he's going fast and I'm trying to keep up with him. And he's just like flying up the mountain. And we finally get to the top of the mountain, and it's been probably about a 4 to 5 mile hike already. And we get to the top, and his dog's urine starting to get, you know, worked up, starting to bark, they're catching a scent. So, you know, he says, you know, release him, release him. So I unclip the two of his hounds, and they go blasting off, and they disappear into the mountain laurel, and his two hounds disappear. And, you know, you hear them barking a bit, and then they're just gone. And, you know, I my only experience with these hunting dogs is my Feist, who's only ever like 100 to 200 yards away. So these hounds, they're just gone. And so I'm just kind of like looking at my friend Taylor being like, all right, I've already hiked 4 or 5 miles. Now we got to go back down the mountain. So we spend about an hour trying to get to the hounds. And, you know, he's got the GPS unit. That's the only reason we know where we're going. But we're now breaking down into designated wilderness. It's a pretty awesome, you know, pretty amazing area. And so we're just like pushing through rhododendron and mountain laurel, you know, caught in those little mountain laurel thickets, which are like scratching up your face and arms. And going down these super steep slopes that are just like just broken rock. You know, it's like slab of rock, and it's hard as hell to walk on that stuff. It's all sliding out from under you. Or just even walking on the dry leaves. Just it's so steep in these Appalachian mountains that you'll just, you know, just fall trying to walk down a slope with leaves on it. So it takes us an hour to get to the bottom. And we're now on this creek, and I am like, I feel like I'm at the limit. Probably hikes like 7 miles, and he's going so fast, and he's now kind of like disappearing ahead of me. And I'm like, don't lose him. I was like praying to God. I was like, give me strength just to be able to keep up. Like I am like really like at my physical limit. And we get down into this creek, and it was really steep down there. And the feeling was that it was, even though it was midday, the feeling was kind of like it was twilight down there. It's like it had a dark shadow just from I guess the sun being kind of behind one of the mountains. And we're walking on this creek, and it's, you know, there's all this moss and whatnot. It's very beautiful. And I'm so exhausted, panting. And I see my friend, he's maybe 50 yards ahead of me, and he kind of points like up the slope now, back up the mountain. And he's like pointing at his ear. And I'm like, okay, he must be in hearing range now of the hounds. And I can finally hear it. And God, it's such a haunting sound. Like it was all echoed. You know, when you yell or a dog barks in these mountains, it just echoes and reverberates. So it's this like haunting, ghostly sound of these dogs, like, oh, oh, oh. It's just like kind of swirling down the mountain. And as this happens, I look down at my feet because I've kind of cut, we're kind of like walking through this creek. And I look at my feet as I'm hearing that sound, and I lift my foot up to cross over a log that's covered in, you know, this like rich green moss. And right as I lift my foot and put it down, I'm all of a sudden, the only way to describe this is I'm all of a sudden in a different time period. Like I literally was in the 1700s or 1800s. And I don't even know if I was me. Like I just was somewhere else. And I could feel that there were like people around me. Like I could feel like, you know, there might've been like two or three, like maybe like Native American scouts or something, like in my general vicinity. And the second I realized this was only like 3 seconds long. But the second I realized that I was actually in another time, I came out of it. And immediately all my hairs are standing up, and immediately I start crying because I'm just like so overwhelmed that something like remarkable or magical has just happened. Something like mysterious has just happened. And I'm like, holy shit, what the what just happened? And I'm weeping. And I'm like, well, pull it together. Like, we got to get to these hounds. Like, now the hounds are only like 200 yards away. Taylor is, you know, breaking up this dry creek to get to the hound. There's a bear on the ground. The hounds are kind of like in a melee with this bear, and Taylor's going, you know, flying up towards it, and I got to follow behind him, and I'm just like limited out on exhaustion. And I'm like, I don't know what happened, but something mysterious happened. And when I think about it, when I thought about it afterwards, I'm like, maybe there are a whole different series of things that could have happened. One is you hear people who are like professional runners, when they've exercised to such an extreme, they can hallucinate. And it's called like runner's high. So I'm like, okay, that's one possibility. Another possibility is I am doing something that someone else has done in the same place. And perhaps, you know, I don't know. Like, perhaps this is a past life of someone else or myself. I have absolutely no idea. Or perhaps that was like a ghost experience. But it was so bizarre. And the only way, yeah, it's hard to describe other than it wasn't that I thought about another time period or that it felt like another time period. Like, oh, wow, you know, I'm at historical Williamsburg. It feels like another time period. It was like I actually am in another time period, like like time travel. And I don't know what to make of it, but it was extraordinary.
It sounds like something I would like to experience at some time.
Yeah.
Well.
And can I say a second part of this?
Oh, yeah.
So when I think about past lives, the way I've kind of connected this story, and, you know, I don't know if these things are interrelated, but the way I've connected them is like this. So when the famous movie, Leonardo DiCaprio, The Revenant, uh-huh. You know, about the fur trappers, right? When that came out in the movie theaters, I was living in New York City. I didn't know how to hunt. I didn't know very much about hunting. I didn't even know about America's like fur trapping history. And I didn't even know that the characters in the movie were fur trappers because it never actually shows them trapping. Like, it just shows them processing some hides. But I just thought that they were like frontiersmen. I didn't really know what they were doing. So I really was totally uneducated in American history. You know, like I told you, my parents are from Europe. I don't really have any family members that have any American history. So I didn't pay any attention in school growing up. So I didn't know shit about American history until the past few years. So anyways, whenever that movie came out, I don't know what, 10 years ago, I can't really remember. But so I go to see that movie. And in the very beginning, you see DiCaprio, and he's elk hunting and he shoots that elk. And then they ride back down into their camp where you see all these guys, which now I know it looks like they're processing like beaver hides and stuff, like fleshing them and whatnot and packing them up. And all of a sudden this Native American tribe rides into their camp and starts slaughtering them. And when I saw this in the movie theater, my whole body started shaking and I felt the only way to describe it is I felt a memory like deep down inside of me, like down below my guts, like down in the core of myself, I felt that what felt like a memory shaking up through my body. Like the memory was moving.
Kind of.
Right. And yeah. I felt it moving up my body and I felt like I was going to scream and I needed to run out of the movie theater. And I've never, ever, ever had that watching any other movie. The memory didn't fully surface, but it was like, I've lived this. Like, I've been slaughtered like this. I've been slaughtered by Native Americans. That was how it felt.
Maybe some of your ancestors was part of the fur trade.
That sounds like PTSD with a doggone
past life. PTSD.
Yeah, it's like a past life PTSD.
Yeah. And, you know, and so I was like, what the hell was that? And, you know, living in New York City, like a few weeks later, I'm on the subway just, you know, going to, you know, on a job or to visit one of my friends. And I would close my eyes and I would just listen to the train moving, the tracks going, and I would almost feel a light version of that, of something, of a memory in that too. And I was like, oh my God, you know, thinking about, you know, the Transcontinental Railroad, like, you know, those early railroads that crossed America and, you know, put people, you know, all those, the buffalo hunters and all those guys that, and I was just thinking about stuff like that. And lastly, we live in an area that in West Virginia that really is preserving the history of the region. And there is a historical logging camp called, the town is called Cass. And they have a historical, they have a whole train yard with historical steam-powered locomotives. And they're so incredible. And you can pay to go on these amazing rides up through the mountains on these old, you know, 1900 locomotives. And I haven't done that yet, but we went to an event there last year. They have like an event every year where they call it the steam show, where all the locomotives blow off some of their steam. And you get to hear these beautiful historical whistles. And the second they started doing those whistles and you could just hear it, whoop, and you could hear that locomotive whistle through the valley. And I just, you know, chills were coming all over my body. And when I would look into like the cab of the locomotive and, you know, cause they would do these little shows where they would go, you know, like a quarter mile down the track and then they would reverse, just doing this show for everybody. And you could kind of stand on the tracks and look, but as the locomotive slowly passed and I see this man in the cab, like in overalls with like an old time hat on, shoveling coal and throwing it into the furnace. Like I was like, I've seen that. I've seen that before. I've seen that. So I don't know how all these things piece together, but is this a past life? Is there such thing as past lives? I have no idea, but it seems as though some of these things are like, these are memories.
I feel like you need to dig into your family history.
Well, I've done a little bit, but they weren't here in America. And
that's what I was thinking. I was like, how would they know?
I don't know.
Well, the crazy thing is, man, when you read it, just pretend all these past life stories are real, okay? Like there's documentaries that the psychologist from UVA goes out to study these kids who tell these really elaborate stories, and then the professor or whatever he is, the expert, will kind of go and study what the kid is saying, and then we'll create a test for the kid and say, hey, can you answer that? Can you answer that? And it looks as though if past life is real, that you jump around. It's like you don't just travel through your own family. Like there's one example where the kid's white, and then the last he died as a little kid, a little black kid in the city. And so it's like we might be, you know, if past life is real, we might be bouncing all over the world. Like who knows? Who knows? But when on my podcast, I interviewed a woman after I got so intrigued by this topic. I interviewed a woman who says she does past life regression, where she like will put you in a hypnosis and will kind of ask you questions and see if memories will surface. And I did it. And I don't really know, you know, it's kind of like, am I just imagining this? It's kind of like dreamlike imagery, but I didn't really have a strong feeling that I was experiencing something real or not. But she says that like, if you have really intense historical interests, that might be past life. So like if you are obsessed with World War II history, that might be past life. If you're obsessed with Civil War history or, you know, falconry or something that's like kind of not really in the culture today, but you're obsessed with it, it might be past life.
Falconry is a whole nother subject.
Coon hunting. I wanted to coon hunt before I even ever went coon hunt when I was a kid. That was like, I want to go coon hunting. You never know.
There you go.
If there are certain things as past lives, I might have been a coon, dude.
You might have been the coon.
Yeah. You never know.
Well, you know, sometimes when I trap coons, I really feel sorry for them. So maybe I was a coon too in a past life.
It's like, I respect the species. Everybody, just because I go coon hunting don't mean I go coon killing. I like to tree them and then sometimes just leave them and go on, because in a competition hunt, you can't kill them anyway. You just tree them, score them, and send them on.
I got a buddy of mine that won't hardly hunt with me because I wouldn't let him kill one one night. Like, I ain't going to kill that one.
Really? Really?
And he was like, well, I won't do this shit again. We done walked like a mile and a half, you know. He's like, well, we won't do this shit again. I was like, why? He's like, because I come to kill something.
So, yeah, well, yeah, it sounds like, you know, guys like you, like, you know, the real houndsmen, you guys are in it for the experience with the dogs and with training the dogs and, you know, seeing the dogs work. Night,
like you was talking about.
Yes.
I like being out there like that.
Me too.
It's so cool being out there.
Yes.
I like being out there at night when everybody else is
I'm
asleep.
Very comfortable in the woods and in the dark. Yeah, very, very comfortable. My youngins are too, especially my oldest one. I had to strap a tracking collar to them to turn them loose now.
Well, man, I tell you what, through doing this podcast, we have actually become friends with several people in West Virginia.
Mm.
And we might be able to hook you up with somebody to go, like, on a, like, coon hunt with, like some hounds, probably some walkers. Sweet. Or Englishes or something, because there's a lot of coon hunters around West Virginia.
Yes.
One of the worst experiences of my life was when I broke down in West Virginia a couple years ago, 3 years ago, somewhere in that neighborhood.
It wasn't that bad.
I've talked about it on the podcast.
Worst experience of your life.
But see,
but you didn't get touched or nothing.
Have you ever seen Wrong Turn?
No, but I've seen Deliverance, which is the famous one from the 70s.
Yeah. So
you should get pretty much
with Wrong Turn. The it, man, after
it's
I watched
like
that,
Deliverance. Might have
with a bunch of with inbreds, three inbred dudes.
Very special.
They're very special. It's a scary movie.
Which one? Wrong Turn?
Yes. I'm telling you, I went coon hunt by myself for a whole month after I watched that. That come out in like the early 2000s, 2002, somewhere in that neighborhood, because I watched it on VHS.
Damn.
And I would not coon hunt by myself. And that was my only frame of reference to West Virginia was that movie. And, man, my transmission went out on the turnpike, the pay road.
I used
it. Yeah, boy. So I'm trying to think where I was near. Are you familiar with, like, Buckley?
Yeah, kind of. Yes. That Beckley?
Yeah, Beckley. That's it. Beckley.
Yeah.
That would be where Mr. Steve Fielder was from, and I'm pretty sure I was close to there.
And you guys did a podcast with him, right?
We did.
We talked to him a pretty good bit, seeing him at places, too. We did. We've done two podcasts with him.
Yeah, we was on his, and then he talked with us at Autumn Oaks.
Nice. Yep. Now, what got you guys interested in hearing some of these weirder stories?
Well, it was kind of my idea as far as that, because I was listening to – I'd already knew I wanted to do a podcast because I had become a podcast junkie.
Mushroom. It was a combination of mushrooms.
It wasn't a mushrooms involved. But I had listened to an episode of – have you ever heard of Tony Merkel's The Confessionals?
No.
Okay, he has a really big podcast also. He's got a huge – podcast. It's even developed, gone past podcasts to like Merkel Media, where they doing like documentaries and stuff. And
wait. Does he do one called Lore?
No.
Okay. All right. Never mind.
And so I was listening to him, and he was talking about a guy. He had interviewed this dude, and they gave him a name. It wasn't his real name. They called him Kyle, but he was telling a story of coon hunting in the Daniel Boone National Forest. And had a run-in with a dog man. And he goes
what
into
the hell?
And he tells this whole story. And one, when I read it, it was talking about coon hunting. I was like, well, this joker was coon hunting. He's not going to bull jive me on this, like, because there's little lingos and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt for certain that he actually knew a little bit about coon hunting back in the day. And I was like, you know what? I coon hunt. I want to be a coon. You know, I want to do a coon hunting podcast. Let's be an avenue to listen to, try to get collect these weird stories. So I'm kind of like in the same way with you as far as we do. is more of like a documentarian or something like that,
yes,
as opposed to just an would not just be entertaining, but like to document these people's encounters.
Well, you honestly, you're being a folklorist, you know, and if no one today in our modern culture, you know, no university student who's interested in folklore is going to go to South Carolina and interview coon hunters about their stories. No one's going to do that. So you guys got to do it, you know, and record the stories.
That's what we are, Ryan. We're folklorists.
I knew I was something special.
Mama yes, exactly. Special. If you're recording the people's stories, you're a folklorist.
I've been told I'm pretty good at telling stories, too. Not lying, but just retelling the story. I see some pretty wild shit, too, from time to time.
That ain't no joke. Be wild.
Well, one of the things I think is the most unnerving about some of the stories that you guys have done that I've listened to thus far is just coming across like creeps. You know, that's almost scarier. Coming across a person, you know, that's scarier. Like a weirdo.
We had a guy roll up on us last night
with a gun.
Thought
in
we
his
were
hand.
Trespassing. Like he was hiding his gun. I seen his gun the whole time. And I
seen
like,
his gun.
All I could think was how big a hole he put in. That's all I could think
of.
Oh,
my goodness.
That's a whole messed up story just me and Daniel know about. But
yeah.
It was a little strange.
Well, it's one thing when it's a property owner, right? But it's another thing when it's like a junkie, you know?
Yeah. Oh, we run up. Yeah, that's pretty cool shit, too, I get to see from time to time.
I don't want to. I haven't had a junkie roll up on me in the woods, and I don't want to because.
No, thank you.
I'll be prone to shoot
first.
All right,
empty pockets.
Questions.
Let's have a safety meeting right damn now.
So having a safety meeting.
What you working with?
But, well, let's see. We rolling at a little over an hour and 10 minutes somewhere in that neighborhood. And I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. And, you know, I know it's like going to be a little bit different of an episode for us, but to be honest, a lot of times
we needed it.
It to break up the
breath of fresh air.
Yeah. It's like I love listening to like possible like potential Bigfoot stories. But
we can tell.
But after you hear like if you get like four or five in a row,
totally,
it's kind of like, you know, we need to break this up with something else.
We need to hear about some meth heads.
Exactly.
No, so I knew, I was like, man, this is be like different but unique for us to interview you and to get you on and talk about, you know, coon hunting. And when I heard you talk about the whole other thing and I was like, yeah, we got to make that happen because that whole bear hunting thing, that kind of like it caught me out.
And then we seen the feist dog.
Yeah. That was when I seen the thing on Instagram, I was like, yeah, I started showing them to Ryan. I was like, yo, is this a prick ear? Is this a mountain feist? And
I said, yes. And I think it might be a Buckley bred dog.
He called it.
You were on it.
He called it. But your female is solid. It's not exactly the color of.
She's a dark color.
Brian's dog. Right, Purdy's more of like a black and tan, isn't she?
Yeah. She's a Reynolds bred. She's out of Earl Reynolds dogs.
But all his puppies, he's got one female that looks like it might be colored up the same color as your female. And the rest of them are got a lot of white.
White and
gray.
Like a gray color.
He's got one solid one. And
hopefully they all make little meat dogs.
I hope so. They're just the best.
Man, if you ever want to come down this way and go squirrel hunting with us, you are the plan.
I would
that.
Love that. I would love that.
And
next
we have
year?
A bunch of history. Like,
I would love that.
We have a bunch of old plantation houses. And
we,
I love all that stuff.
We are surrounded by Sumter National Forest.
And Revolutionary War battlefield at Musgrove Hills.
And pretty much all of Sumter National Forest in our area at one point in time was old farmland, plantation land, all of it. Pretty much all of Sumter National Forest around here used to be that.
Did you know we got like a – so, you know, going out Young Road toward Ingalls?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of that road, there's a driveway.
Yep, that's his sister, Reese's sister.
No, that ain't Miss Young. I don't know that that's Reese's sister. Unless he's got more than one.
Has he
got more than one sister?
Yeah, right there at the end of that road.
Well, anyways, down that driveway, you remember in the movie The Patriot, Tarverton, the dude that rode the horse for the British?
Yeah.
He had a supply camp behind Duncan Creek Church.
Oh, wow.
Over there. They hung five boys at a station called Hayes' Station. It was like a store or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know where that was, but they hung five teenage boys there, Tarverton or whatever. All right, so our local militia got together, and down that driveway, that was like a road that went down through there. And they come down through there, and a local militiaman had got together. Like, when I was in school, we went down this driveway and took a field trip. You can still see, like, the berm that they hid behind and stuff, and they kicked their ass. And I forgot.
You know,
exactly,
you know, your dad's like from England and all that, but
I didn't even think about that. But anyways, they kicked them pretty good. The local militia did, but Tarverton had a. There's an old. I hate to even say that on here. We might have to bleep that out. But there's an old supply camp behind the Duncan Creek Church.
I remember we talked about it back in there.
Yeah. So what?
It was a supply camp for that guy that was. The dude Tarverton, I don't even know if that was his real name or not, to be honest with you. But there's a lot of history right here around our house.
Yeah. Oh, that's dude, awesome. I remember y'all talked about the CCC camps on your last podcast.
Oh, there's a lot of them, too.
There's a lot. There's a one place in particular called Molly's Rock around near us that the CCC camp pretty much I've looked into that a good bit. And I can tell you some more about that than what that dude told you. Because, yeah, they would not just go to their state. They were liable to be shipped off to Indiana, or very rarely did they stay in their own home state.
Okay.
So, yeah, they would do that. It was just like joining the military. You had to go.
Yes.
And then you got shipped off to other. But they are the ones who pretty much most of the old National Forest stuff, all of our gravel roads pretty much around them CCC camps, they built them roads. They hauled all the gravel in. They hauled millions of tons of gravel and put them first roads down. They planted several thousands of acres. They planted all of our pine trees that we have around
here.
Really?
Son of a gun.
Wow.
Yeah, like so, and they're still, if you ever come down this way, I can take you to the remnants of, it's in the woods, but where all the CCC camps was lined up in a row down the woods.
Like their old fire pits and stuff.
Yeah, all their, where their cabins could have been and stuff.
And some devil worshiping spots too.
I want to see that.
There's some of that there.
I want to see that, but I might get a little spooked.
Yeah, it is a little spooky, but
I've had a weird experience in a abandoned cemetery that's kind of on those lines.
Oh, we even got one of them too. It's supposed to be spooky. Yeah. I've never been spooked in it.
Me either.
Done some other stuff in it, but I didn't get spooked.
We ain't even gonna talk about that one. But yeah, man, if you get a chance to this coming winter, you want to come down, we can definitely make something happen, and we can definitely
awesome.
Put that
yeah,
pretty
pitch camp at my house. Shit,
that little mountain feist, we can definitely put that song on and some squirrels.
Yeah,
heavy squirrels.
Heavy on the squirrels.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Like if you're not knocking out a limit in that day, we didn't do our job. Because there's some spots that have not been touched.
I think you kill 10 a day. I think we can kill 10 a day per person.
Are you serious?
Yeah, per person.
It's 5 here.
Yeah, we get 10. And you
can
probably
squirrel
get
seat.
It pretty decent.
Yeah, we'll take you on a coon hunt, too, see if we can trace some of them little Rickies. Well, man, it's just starting to get dark. My wife and little girl, they outside waiting on us to finish up.
Okay.
So, yeah, they're keeping.
Now,
keeping everything
could
quiet.
I just say,
yeah.
Could I just say something real quick?
Yeah, man, go ahead.
Well, I just thought it would be cool to tell this to your audience. You know,
yeah.
So for me, first and foremost, I feel like I'm an artist, and like art is what I care about. And, you know, I just feel there's a little bit of a disconnect between, you know, hunting and art. And, you know, I feel like a lot of hunters or real like country guys I know out here don't necessarily care that much about art or, have, you know, looked at much art or gone to museums and stuff like that. And I just feel like saying to all the hunters out there, like, so much of art is about hunting, and it always has been. Like, I would say like one fifth of all art is about hunting. Like, when you walk into museums, you're going to just see images of hunting with hounds back in Europe, amazing paintings from like the Dutch painters of like hounds fighting like a huge bear. Mm-hmm. It's just like, and you know, even there are rock paintings of that are 8,000 years old in Saudi Arabia that are the earliest art of about dogs. And it shows hunter, you know, it's like rock carvings. So it shows like very simple kind of stick looking figures. It's 9,000 years old of guys with bows and arrows with dogs, some of them on leash, like hunting whatever ungulate is out there. And there's even images of a hunter with two dogs and like a lion bait, like, yes, carved into a rock. Like, if you just Google oldest dog rock carvings, you'll see these pictures, and it's amazing. So like, to me, I'm just like so much of art and art history and literature is about hunting. And I just like want to kind of share that message. And like, I just finished one of the best things I've ever read, which is William Faulkner's The Bear. And that is, it's you know, William Faulkner, one of the most famous writers in America. And he actually would go to hunt. He every year would go to a hunting camp where they would bear hunt, deer hunt, and coon hunt with dogs. And this story, you know, it's a novella, so it's like a short novel, is about trying to catch this impossible to catch mythic bear that they call Old Ben. And they have to find the right dog to hunt it. And the hounds don't work. They almost catch and bay this mythical bear with a feist. That doesn't work. And finally, they find this dog that they call Lion, which is like part Mastiff, part Airedale. And it's just, the writing is just so beautiful and powerful. Story. Strong urge to say there's so much amazing art, so much amazing literature about what we are all doing and like what you guys grew up doing.
Did we lose him again?
You there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Okay.
I thought we lost you again.
Yeah.
Now, I agree with you on that. I think you'd be surprised at how many people that do what we do is all in. Like, your paintings and stuff are awesome.
Well, thank you.
I think you should come to the Grand American. Possibly.
Is that a big coon hunt?
Man,
is that like
know,
a
dude, you need to experience that.
I don't know anything about that kind of stuff, the contests and stuff.
Okay, so.
Yes. And.
It's more the it's like a big-ass coon dog jockey lot, pretty much.
Gotcha.
It's hard to describe. There's people that come in. There'll be like a little over 30,000 people come through the fairgrounds between Friday and Saturday. Yeah.
Whoa. Okay. What state?
It's in South Carolina. It's in the almost in the kind of the lower state of South Carolina. It's in Orangeburg, South Carolina. Are you on Facebook, man?
No, but I need to do that. I need to get back on it.
Yes, you need a Facebook.
You need an Instagram, Ryan.
I guess I do need an Instagram.
Well, let's get off the phone so I can let my wife back in the house. She's just sitting on the front porch rocking, probably scrolling Facebook or TikTok or something like that, killing the time away.
Well, I love that she's out on the porch like a proper country folk, you know, doing it right.
Kind of.
Watching some of the local idiots go up and down the road.
Yeah. But... Man, we'd definitely have to hook up and get together and go do some hunting and all that good stuff. And like I say, I just want to thank you for coming on and tell everybody the name of your podcast again.
Yes, it's Our Numinous Nature. Numinous is Numinous. It's a very difficult word to remember, but numinous basically means like a spiritual experience. So that was what I was really aiming for with my podcast, kind of like you guys. I was hoping that people would tell me some kind of strange, mysterious, powerful, life-changing experience. Sometimes I get that on the podcast. A lot of people tell like ghost stories, near-death stories, like a musher who fell in the ice or an oyster waterman in the Chesapeake Bay who shipwrecked in his sailboat, stuff like that. And, And then sometimes I get lucky and I get a really numinous story. Like I interviewed a retired game warden in Virginia, and he told a really powerful story about working in a maximum security prison, doing some soul searching, and like having like a full body religious experience. So like you guys, I love hearing these kind of mysterious stories. I just love it.
Right on.
Sweet.
Well, man, we're going to get off of here and
thank you, gentlemen.
We'll definitely stay in touch, man.
Yeah, have a good one,
hell
man.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Thank you, guys.
All right, thank you.
Later.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Coon Hunting Confidentials on the Houndstooth Podcasting Network. If you want to get in touch with me, my email address is htpodinfo@gmail.com. That is htpodinfo@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you with all your coon hunting stories that include the creepy, crazy, and the unexplained. Until next time, keep them dogs in the woods and happy hunting, y'all.